Hello. The problem of corruption of one kind or another exists in Jamaica as it does in every other police department, in every country across the globe, in which humans are police officers. It does not mean, however, that we should not continue the quest for a more perfect resolution to this vexing issue, as we seek to bring greater accountability, transparency, and fidelity to public institutions. With that said, were we to give credence to the Jamaican naysayers who criticize the police, one would walk away believing that the police department is so rotten that the only solution is to scrape it up and put it in a garbage bin and just put it outside for the Riverton dump. Sure, they want you to believe that the police is totally and completely corrupt when they tell you that, put up a hand and say hush. This blathering gibberish that the police is so inherently corrupt is all nonsense. The cynics and the detractors will tell you that doing a comparative analysis is the equivalent of supporting slackness in the JCF. Of course, none of this is true. That kind of nonsense is part of the cycle of unwillingness to deal with the issue objectively. And in a society like ours, where we know that we have so many people who are benefiting from crime, this is to be expected. The truth of the matter is that police corruption is a serious degenerative cancer which diminishes the moral high ground officers of the law must have in order to effectively do their jobs. And like in any other discipline, the stain and the stench of corrupt police officers tend to stain and stink their colleagues with potentially greater consequences than those people in other disciplines. In the United States, for example, a cop asking an errant motorist for a couple of dollars to purchase lunch is literally non-existent because they're not destitute. They're not unable to find money to pay for their own lunch. That is not to say that in many cities across the United States, police officers do not rob drug dealers of their money. But cops are generally paid well enough. They can afford to live on their wages. And so they don't have to scrounge illegally in order to survive. A cop who asks a motorist for a bribe is an embarrassment to himself and to his department. A cop who falsifies a report and send an innocent person to prison for a crime he never committed, that cop wrecks lives, wrecks families, and destroys communities. And so when we hold both scenarios up, neither is good. But one is far worse than the other, you'll agree. In a perfect world, I'd prefer not to have an officer who pulls me over, try to shake me down for money. But I'd much rather a cop ask me for lunch money because he's hungry rather than a cop who planted drugs on me because he did not like the color of my skin. Now that we've done that parallel, I hope you at least understand that in the greater scheme of things, the JCF is not irredeemable despite what the cynics tell you. Former Minister of National Security Robert Montague would certainly not have been my first choice for Minister of National Security at the time he was given the job. I guess Minister Montague realized that he did not bring much of an expertise to the job. And so he set out to learn the job. He did stumble, like we all do, given new situations. But if Bobby Montague did nothing else, he certainly endeared himself to the average cop and he absolutely endeared himself to me. Bobby Montague understood the importance of morale in a job like policing. And he worked to restore morale with marked success before he was moved to a different ministry. And speaking of the constant bad-mouthing of the police, Bobby Montague spoke a truth that many do not want to hear in our country. He alluded to the fact that the inspectorate branch of the JCF estimates that the JCF is 5% corrupt. Conversely, INDICOM, the great agitator against the police, assesses that the JCF is only 3% corrupt. Now, I don't know how you look at that, but for me, 3%, 5%, it's too many. But here's the thing. Given a scenario in which I have 100 people to choose from, and only 3 are dishonest, I'm going to take that organization. Now, we'd all like to have a police department that is 0% corrupt. But you know what? Since we no longer source our officers from Utopia, I'll take the 3%. And so we could work to lower that number. So much for the notion that police cannot police itself. Nevertheless, That is not the point of what I'm saying to you. It is important to understand that unless we fix some of the structural deficiencies in the police vis-a-vis low wages, poor leadership, lack of resources, among other things, as they also exist across the wider society, corruption will persist and will be exponentially more difficult to eradicate. As was to be expected, Bobby Montague's call fell on deaf ears. In our country, which is essentially one of the most, if not the most, anti-police countries in the world, hating and berating the police guarantees instant fame and success. Given the high crime rate, the continued tearing down and disrespectful behavior directed at the police is directly tied to the trajectory of serious crimes. The government has not led by setting an example. It has not devised a strategy for the country to follow by supporting the police unequivocally. In fact, the Minister of Justice is openly hostile to the police. Despite all the little cosmetic things he has done to give an illusion that he's for law and order or the rule of law. Not only is that shocking, there are agencies within the government which are actively hostile to the police. Something literally unseen in any other country. It defies logic that any government would tolerate one agency actively militating against another agency of the said government. Least of all, an agency as critical as the one tasked with national security. Not only is Indicom antagonistic to the police department, the Justice Ministry, under the leadership of Delroy Chuck, is inherently hostile and dedicated to being injurious to the police. Additionally, the Office of the Public Defender, another agency of the government, is openly hostile. That agency is consciously and gleefully works against the police department. And the government does nothing. It is a classic personification of an entity cannibalizing itself. Sadly, to the detriment and chagrin of the country and its law-abiding citizens. In recent times, the appellate court ruled that Indicom has no power under the statute towards police officers. That ruling also stated correctly that Indicom must investigate and submit the findings of its investigations to the Director of Public Prosecutions, the DPP. At the same time, the courts opined that Indicom's agents may arrest police officers using their common law powers of arrest. The same powers every citizen has to arrest if he or she witnesses an offense being committed in his or her presence. But the latter part of that ruling, which speaks to common law arrests, was indeed asinine. As ordinary citizens may only arrest if they see a crime being committed in their view, in front of them. They have no power to investigate. Indicom agents does. They don't arrest for what they see, so how can they legitimately arrest under common law when the common law statute clearly says a citizen can only arrest if he sees an offense occurring, and generally a serious offense, murder, rape, robbery. He may hold a person, arrest that person's ability to leave until law enforcement arrives. And so immediately after the ruling, the Commissioner of Indicom, Terrence Williams, argued that the ruling was a win for him and his agency, as he had only arrested on common law. And we all know that that was bullshit. And so from this bloviating idiot, it was a win. But now, in the time that passed since his ruling, he has appealed to the Privy Council, to the Judicial Committee of the Privy Council, to stay the Appellate Court's decision. This is one government agency acting as if it's a government, acting as if it cannot wait. And in fact, Terrence Williams says he doesn't even want to wait, despite Delroy Chuck's insistence that it was the intention of the parliament to give Indicom the power of arrest. And so what is Terrence Williams' response? I don't want to wait for that. Which means he doesn't trust the same government that created the act and employed him. The same parliament. He doesn't trust the parliament. He doesn't trust the nation's parliament. He wants the power to be given to him, to be interpreted by the United States, by the British Privy Council. In essence, it's a kind of a top-down approach, a Bucky Massa approach This is the kind of system that we have in Jamaica. And so when you hear people talk about we can't go to Jamaica because of the crime, that's why. Because there are people actively invested in the promulgation and the proliferation of crime in Jamaica while they collect salaries as legislators. Del Ratchett, the Minister of Justice, jumped into the fray stating that the intent of the Parliament was to give Indicom the power of arrest. But I beg to digress, because no matter how incompetent the framers as the Indicom Act was, they couldn't be that incompetent that they couldn't state on paper their clear and unequivocal intent. Didn't require any interpretation. If you want to say they have the power of arrest, you say in the statute that they have the power of arrest. One doesn't have to be a lawyer to do that. Since that happened, a few legal minds have argued that investigators should not prosecute their own investigations, despite the statement of intent coming from Chuck. Terrence Williams insists he don't want to wait for a ruling. He doesn't want to wait for the Parliament to fix it. He's going straight to the Privy Council. Here it is, an agency of government going above everybody else's head, over the Parliament, to go to the highest court, which is still remains a Privy Council for whatever reason, to get what he wants. Because the people who framed the legislation, the people who came up with the legislation, the people who put the legislation together and passed it into law and hired him cannot be trusted to give him the power that he wants. Sounds like a fairy tale, right? This agency gets almost $300 million per year, Jamaican taxpayer money. They also get money from overseas. That money keep pouring in. Almost another $300 million. From what they tell us. We don't know if it's true. And so the average Jamaican who is clamoring for Indicom and for the existence of Indicom cannot understand fundamentally the damage that Indicom is doing. Because for the average police officer, he doesn't want to risk getting arrested. He doesn't want to risk going to jail or investigated. So he does nothing. Do you blame him? I don't. And so, having looked at this, I started to look at the British system and I wondered why Hamish Campbell was in Jamaica. Because Indicom is an agency that was formed under the Labour Party government. I've looked everywhere. Major police departments. I don't see any situation. But I stand to be corrected on this. I have not seen one single case where a civilian oversight agency also have the power to arrest, to investigate, arrest, and prosecute. Nowhere. But in England, according to the Observer.com, every time someone is shot by the police in the UK, the case is referred to the Independent Police Complaints Commission. That's the IPCC. In practice, this means that the officer is investigated by his professional standards body automatically and can face getting sacked and prosecuted if the IPCC rules against him. These investigations are lengthy, stressful, and carry a huge amount of risk for the officer concerned. In fact, they are so feared that not only do the police refuse to be routinely armed, specialist firearms teams struggle to find candidates willing to do the job. There you have it. There's a solution. The report went on to say that, to be clear, police have worked out that it's safer to be unarmed when fighting thugs and terrorists than it is to risk being hung out to dry by their leadership and the IPCC. How fantastic is that? That is the same system that has been introduced to Jamaica. You don't find that in any other developed country. Only in Britain, where nobody has guns. You don't find that in Jamaica that is in the United States that is awash in guns, a country that has more guns than people. But that's what they brought to Jamaica in the form of Indicom. It's a copy of the British IPCC. A copy of the Independent Police Complaints Commission in England. A country in which the police decided they're not going to carry any guns. The police decided they're not going to carry any guns because they don't want to deal with the shit. Period. Even the special squads don't want to have, people don't want to sign up for them. So this may be a strategy. This may be something for members of the police department to look at. It may be something for the Federation to look at. And it may be something for individual police officers to look at. Don't take no gun when you're going out on the streets. Don't carry no gun. Whatever you see, leave it alone. Leave it alone. Let crime inundate the country. Leave it alone. Leave it alone. Somehow this has to come to a head. We cannot have a taxpayer-funded agency and one person, one egomaniacal narcissist, taking it upon himself to be God. And the government does nothing. The party that created Indicom, the Jamaica Labour Party which created Indicom, is the Jamaica Labour Party which is advancing Indicom's agenda and the Jamaican people. States of emergency and ZOSO are stopgap measures. They're not crime, they're not law enforcement and crime strategies. And like I said repeatedly, those strategies, those stopgap methods, only serve to push criminals out so they go somewhere else and commit crimes. That's what has been happening. Because the government refuses to rein in Indicom and stop listening to the United States and to other and to Great Britain or anybody who, or Canada, or whoever want to criticize and take a hold of its crime problem. America takes a hold of its damn crime problem. Nobody criticizes, nobody tells their police departments what to do. Nobody. And so it's not up to the State Department to tell us how to police our country, how to police Jamaica. Because nobody tells law enforcement in the United States how to police. And nobody hangs their police officers out to dry. We'll talk some more.